Punjabi Hari. Founder Sharya Shri Prabhupada Ki, Samaved Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda, glorious system of devotees, all glorious system of devotees, all glorious system of devotees, all glorious to Sri Guru and Sri Guranda. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So we're reading today from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, the prayers by Queen Kunti, and we're doing text 24. Of course, text 25 is one of the most famous verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which I was supposed to give, but Chaturatma traded with me, and he got it. So he said he had to work. It was okay, but this is they're all very good. Okay, text 24. Vishan Mahagne Purushara Darshanad.
Vishan Mahagne Purushara Darshanad.
Asat Shabhaya Vanavasa Kritschita.
Asat Shabhaya Vanavasa Kritschita.
Mridhe Mridhe Neka Maharatharastrato. Dronya stritas chasmi hare birakshita.
Dronya stritas chasmi hare birakshita.
Vishana hagne purushada durshanad.
Vishana hagne purushada durshanad.
Asat sapaya vanavasa kritschita.
Asat sapaya vanavasa kritschita.
Mirhe mirhe neka maharatashtrito. Dronya stritas chasmi hare birakshita.
Dronya stritas chasma hare birakshita.
Vishan mahagne purushada darshanad.
Vishan mahagne purushada darshanad.
Asat sabhaya vanavasa kritschita.
Asat sabhaya vanavasa kritschita.
Mridhe mridhe neka maharatashtrito. Dranyastritas chasmi hare barakshita.
Dranyastritas
Vaishnavis. Vishat, from poison, Maha-agne, from the great fire, Purusha-ada, the man-eaters, Darshanat, by combating, Asat, vicious, Sabhaya, assembly, Vanavasa, exiled to the forest, Krichchata, sufferings. Mrithe, mrithe. Again and again in battle. Aneka. Many. Maharata. Great generals. Ashtata. Weapons. Drowni. The son of Dronacharya. Astrata. From the weapon of. Cha. And. Asma. Indicating past tense. Hare, O my Lord, Abhirakshita, protected completely. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. My dear Krishna, your Lordship has protected us from a poison cake, from a great fire, from cannibals, from the vicious assembly, from sufferings during our exile in the forest, and from the battle where great generals fought. And now you have saved us from the weapon of Ashvatthama. Report. The list of dangerous encounters is submitted herein. Devaki once was put into difficulty by her envious brother. Otherwise, she was well. But Kunti Devi and her sons were put into one difficulty after another for years and years together. They were put into trouble by Duryodhana's party due to the kingdom. And each and every time, the sons of Kunti were saved by the Lord. Once Bhima was administered poison in a cake. Once they were put into a house made of shellac and set afire. And once Draupadi was dragged out and attempts were made to insult her by stripping her naked in this vicious assembly of the Kurus. The Lord saved Draupadi by supplying an immeasurable length of cloth, and Duryodhana's party failed to see her naked. Similarly, when they were exiled in the forest, Bhima had to fight with the man-eater demon Hidimba Rakshasa, but the Lord saved him. So it was not finished there. After all these tribulations, there was the great battle of Kurukshetra, and Arjuna had to meet such great generals as Drona, Bhishma, and Karna, all powerful fighters. And at last, even when everything was done away with, there was a Brahmastra released by the son of Dronacharya to kill the child within the womb of Uttara. And so the Lord saved the only surviving descendant of the Kurus, Maharaj Parikrit. Om Gyana Tamanandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksamunitamina Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Panchakal Patrubhischa Kripsin Nubyevacha Patitano Pavanibhyo Vaishnava Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Prabhupada. So Queen Kunti is here giving a list of all the calamities that they faced, of all the suffering and distress that the Pandavas were put through. And as Prabhupada says in his purport, it wasn't once or twice or, you know, a few things. It was year after year after year, difficulty after difficulty after difficulty. Through all this great distress, there was one constant, and that was Krishna continued to save them. She's saying, because in every one of these situations, every one of these pastimes, she's saying, and you save this from this, and you save this from this. So Krishna continually saved Queen Kunti and all the Pandava brothers from one catastrophe after another. So, of course, in the next verse, Kunti gives her very exalted, very advanced understanding of what this means to her and how this was to her benefit of being able to see Krishna. But more on that tomorrow. That will be, I'm sure, extensively discussed. So I want to talk today about this idea of why devotees are put into these situations. Why are devotees put into suffering? Why are they put into distress? Now, we may feel that we can understand that Krishna has these pastimes with eternal associates. These eternal associates, they are with Krishna all the time. They're with him in Goloka Vrindavan. They come and descend to this world with him. So these are obviously pastimes they're going through. And we can say, okay, well, they're pure devotees and they understand the big picture. They understand the purpose. But we may say, I'm not on that level. I certainly am not. And I don't necessarily understand the distress and the pain that we experience in this world. So I'm going to talk today, and actually this is a reprise of something I did before. Actually, it was 2016 at the ISKCON Leadership Sangha in Mayapur. We did a series of seminars, and I did a couple of seminars there. And one I did was called Why Devotees Experience Distress, which seemed to be very appropriate for the topic that we're talking about today, when Mother Kunti is talking about all the distresses that the Pandavas were put through. So what I want to talk about, and I'll try to have to do this briefly, is that, first of all, the Vaishnava's understanding of suffering in this material world. Secondly, how bhakti results in the elimination of suffering, but yet still, devotees experience suffering in the material world, sometimes even after years and years of devotional service. And then I want to discuss four specific reasons that I found why devotees suffer based upon the acharyas and Srila Prabhupada and their scriptures. At least I hope they're well documented. And then finally, how a devotee may experience freedom from the suffering, at least to some degree. So I'm going to try to do that, all that in the next half hour. Okay. Vaishnava understanding of suffering. Suffering is here. You are in the material world. I am in the material world. We are bound to suffer. Prabhupada would say, no one wants to suffer, yet it comes. That's the very nature. Right from the very beginning, one of Krishna's very first instructions to Arjuna in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita is Matra Sparshatakuntaya Shikrishna Sukadukada Agama Payano Nichas Tangtatikshashkabharata. O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress, and their appearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O Sena Bharata, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. So, one of the very first lessons. Why do we experience happiness and distress? Because of sense perception. That means because we are in these bodies. And so the gross and the subtle bodies are what is actually experiencing distress, and is experiencing happiness and unhappiness. And therefore, the devotee with spiritual understanding has to learn to tolerate these things. And it's very difficult because the spirit soul, the jiva, which experiences no distress, except for sometimes spiritual distress on a very high level, that's another topic, but does not experience material distress. But we are so embedded in these bodies, and the subtle body, the gross body, that we naturally have some identification, and we experience distress. We experience the pain that's there, even though it's really not related to our spiritual nature. So a devotee has to understand this is the way of things. Even in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there's a discussion of the items of knowledge. Right? Those things that constitute knowledge. And one of the verse ones is perception of the evils of birth, death, disease, and old age. It doesn't say perception of the wonderful flow of nature, you know, the wonderful, you know, cycles that we all just, you know, no, it's called evils. Evils of birth, death, old age. Now, why evils? You say, well, it's natural. Yes, it's natural, but it's not natural to our spiritual self. It's not innate, and it's not natural to the Atma to die and take birth again. So, These are things that we began to understand. Distress is a part of this material world. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.18 says, as far as happiness derived from sense enjoyment is concerned, it can be obtained automatically in course of time, just as in due course of time, we obtain miseries, even though we do not desire them. So distress comes automatically, happiness comes on its own accord, part of the duality of this material world. And we all know these things are discussed so many times in our scriptures, the threefold miseries of life, the adiatmic, adidaivic, adibodhic, birth, death, disease, and old age. In other words, this is kind of the status quo being the material world. So should we be surprised at their suffering? No. We should understand that it's practically the definition of this material world means distress, means suffering, means unhappiness. Also happiness, there's that too, but the two sides are always there. Now, how do we get relief from the suffering? Well, the Nectar Devotion, Bhakti Samrita Sindhu, tells us there's six results from bhakti. It awards auspiciousness is the first one. And the second one, I think it's the second one, is kleshagni, the ability to destroy suffering. This is a result of bhakti, but suffering is destroyed. As I mean, well, maybe for a very advanced devotee. No, it's described by acharyas that the first and second qualities of auspiciousness and kleshagni, the taking away or the destruction of suffering, are there within sadhana bhakti. It's described how the first two qualities are connected with sadhana, the second two with the stage of bhava, and the fifth and sixth qualities, the stage of prema. So in other words, even at the stage of sadhana, for a beginning devotee like us, it says that one's suffering can be destroyed. Now, how does it happen? Obviously, it doesn't mean all material suffering, but the spiritual suffering is ended. In a lecture in August 1971 in London, Srila Prabhupada said, by this initiation, in other words, the people who are beginning initiated from the spiritual master, by chanting Hare Krishna mantra, your sinful activities will be counteracted undoubtedly. So in other words, all sinful activities are being counteracted by this process of bhakti yoga. So a very advanced devotee does not really experience material distress in the same way that a non-devotee does, because the attachment to the material body is broken and there's not the same identification with the suffering of the body and the mind. So when Srila Prabhupada was very sick at the end of his life, was he experiencing pain? Well, yes. I mean, you can't say, well, he just never experiences anything. No, we are sentient beings, and as long as we are in the body, there's going to be some experiences of the sensations of the body and sensations of the mind. So the sensation is there, but the identification isn't there. And therefore, the suffering is a little different. The suffering is mitigated. And at the same time, a pure devotee is experiencing spiritual happiness from within in his relationship to Krishna, which also mitigates the material distress that one might be experiencing. So these are important points about how bhakti begins to end the process of suffering. It's actually described that suffering is destroyed by the chanting of the holy name. It's this process, the Yuga Dharma, Sankirtan Jagya, which destroys the process of suffering. Now, it's described, especially by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, that there are three types of suffering. There's the sinful reaction called papam that we experience from past activities or present activities. There's also then, this is in the sixth chapter, the sixth canto, the story of Ajamil. This discussion is there. Because this is what related to the question Maharaj Purkit answered. Why is it that one sins and atones and sins and atones and the process never ends? It seems like an endless cycle. You know, one does prayashchitta, atonement, but yet still the sinful action goes on. And it's explained. There's the sinful reaction, but there's the seed of sin or the bija, which is the material desires. As long as the desires are still there, one will still continue to commit the same activity. And where does that seed of sin come from? Where does that come from? Ignorance. Avidya. Vishwanath says it's avidya, the ignorance, which then, because we're deluded, therefore we continue the sinful activities, we don't stop those desires, and then the reactions continue. So when Prabhupada, there are two types of sinful reactions called parabdham. I can never say it right. Parabdham and aparabdham. Very, very difficult. Parabdham and aparabdham, I think. In other words, those that are mature, Prabhupada just calls them those that are mature and those that are immature. That's a simple way to. In other words, ones that have already fructified and ones that are yet to come. So, in other words, we may be born a certain way. Let's say I was born blind or crippled or whatever. If I chant Hare Krishna, I'm not really that likely to regain my sight or my leg to grow back. But those immature reactions, those are cut off. Bhakti can alleviate the suffering experience and break the chain of future karma. And it does so sequentially. It's described in that devotion from the most current to the least current. So it goes the parabdham, the bija, the seeds, and then kamputi, and then aparabdham, those which are totally unmanifest. But we might have to suffer 10 years from now or next lifetime. Those are cut by the process of bhakti. So when we say bhakti gives immediate relief of suffering, what do we mean?
Well, I always wondered about that.
What do they mean? And how immediate? You know? And Jiva Goswami explains that. This is a Jiva Goswami's commentary in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.123. He gives the example of poking a needle through a stack of leaves. Okay? The leaves are like your many lives, okay? Jiva Goswami says, therefore, one should understand that the corrupted karmas will be destroyed in the manner of a needle piercing 100 lotus leaves. The needle appears to pierce the whole pile in one instance, you know, done. Immediately. But actually, it pierces one leaf at a time gradually. It's like if you put it in slow motion, you know, it'd be like going through one. Similarly, the karmas will be destroyed gradually. Though from the perspective of the unlimited duration of the jiva's existence in the world, it destroyed all at once. So it's a matter of time perspective. To us, we think, oh my gosh, when is this suffering going to end? But from the time perspective of thousands and millions of lifetimes in the material world, it's a tiny, tiny bit left. A tiny bit left. We're so close to the end. That's why I never give up. We're close to the finish line. We can do it. You know, even in this, Prabhupada said, even this lifetime, we can end this whole activity. So anyway, we need to end the material desires. I'll go through some of this quickly. Avidya is the source of ignorance. And Jiva also says that in the verse of 1.2.21, we're talking about the Hriday Granthi, the knot in the heart. Jiva says that's the same as avidya, of ignorance. The knot in the heart is ignorance. And once that is cut, all misgivings are cut to pieces, the chain of fruit of action is terminated. So when one is in knowledge, one terminates this whole karmic cycle. Gradually, not necessarily immediately. Now still, knowing all of this, being in knowledge, not being in ignorance, we still find ourselves suffering this material world. And this is often a source of great anxiety and bewilderment, even for, you know, serious devotees, even for experienced devotees. We might wonder, after so many years of devotional service, why am I still suffering? Because we might misinterpret somewhat the causes of suffering and what this really means. So, my main topic is, why does a devotee still experience suffering? Well, I came up with four. There's some overlap, but basically four reasons. The first one is lila between Krishna's devotees. The second one is reaction to past sinful activities that are still present. The third one is that Krishna sometimes puts devotees in difficulty for their own advancement and surrender. And four, we sometimes experience suffering because of offenses, primarily Vaishnava aparad. So I'm going to go through those. Now, as far as the lila of devotees in distress, we can find the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita filled with these examples. We are reading this example today of the Pandavas and Mother Kunti. All kinds of distresses, all kinds of calamities being experienced by the Pandavas one after another. But as we know, these are eternal associates performing these pastimes. Prahlad Maharaj, harassed by his father to the point of trying to kill him in so many ways. And of course, his reaction, his response was simply to chant Hare Krishna, depend upon Krishna. And Krishna saved him time after time. We have the example from Chaitanya Charitamrita of Haridas Thakur, who was, because of his great offense of chanting the holy names, was beaten in 22 marketplaces. In other words, one after another, because the guards of the Kazi were supposed to kill him, and they couldn't kill him. He wouldn't die. So they took him to one after another and beat him and beat him. And he finally had to say, I'm sorry, am I supposed to die? And they go, yes, please, we'll be in such trouble. Okay. So he pretended to die, and you know that story. And then later, of course, in the Mahaprakash Lila, Lord Chaitanya, Mahaprabhu revealed, taking off his wrap or shawl from his back, the lashes, that he had taken all of those beatings for Haridas Thakur, and that's how Haridas Thakur is able to survive. So these are great, great pastimes and leelas amongst Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, and his great surrender devotees. So, as neophytes, we may not feel we're so much involved in direct leela. You know, I'm suffering somewhat today and feeling some distress. That's my leela with Krishna. I wouldn't presume to say that, so much. But it's not that these don't mean anything. Why do we have these stories? They're instructive for us. They teach us so many lessons of faith. Lord Kunti Devi is teaching us the mood, the attitude of how one surrenders to Krishna time after time, expecting his protection, and seeing Krishna is her great, here's her satisfaction. Prahlada Maharaj, depending upon Krishna, and Krishna say, so many things that we learn from all of these pastimes. We learn about the Lord's mercy with Haridas Thakur, how merciful and kind he is to his devotees. So this is not, these are just some pastimes of pure devotees. That mean anything to me. No, they mean a lot to us. It's very important. It's why we read them. And at the same time, they may not always exactly apply to our situation. Now, move. Okay. So let's go to B, the next thing. We know that the nature of this material world is distress and suffering, but the devotee is relieved from much of that, that we still may suffer some reactions due to our past. We might experience distresses of loss of wealth, or we have health issues, mental disturbances, anxiety, so many other sufferings. But it's important to understand that it's not a result of karma. For a devotee, it is not ordinary karma, as with a non-devotee. Vishnu says it's incidental effects of devotional service. Now, we'll have to break that down a little bit. What does it mean, incidental effects? But it's quite different. In other words, it has to do with being a devotee and one's relationship with Krishna and devotional service, not due to just one's past karma. Oh, I did this, now I'm getting slammed with this karmic reaction. Because we know that devotional service destroys the effects of karma, but it's described that there may be a residual effect. In other words, it takes some time for that to all end. And Srila Prabhupada gave the famous example that we all heard, I'm sure, of the fan. You pull the plug or turn off the switch on the fan, and it slowly, slowly begins to stop until it comes to a stop. He said, so that's what it's like for us. You know, it's like it takes a little time. In other words, the electricity, the power is pulled. We're not creating any more karma, but it may take some time for us to work through some of that past karma. But those karmic reactions are also minimized. Srila Prabhupada, actually, I was trying to find this. I found it's in one place I found it was Teachings of Queen Kunti in chapter 8. It's probably similar in this story. Prabhupada says, the knife that cuts the hand was meant to kill. He gives that example for a devotee. In other words, your karma may have been to get stabbed by a knife and killed, but Krishna gives you a reaction that you cut your hand. So rather than saying, oh my gosh, look, that really hurts. I cut my hand. Why did Krishna let me cut my hand? Krishna to save you from being stabbed to death. Seriously, that's what Srila Prabhupada is saying. We have no idea what kind of reactions we may have gotten due to our past karmic activities and all of our sinful activities for so many lifetimes. Yeah. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, although a Vaishnava's happiness and distress are felt as pleasure and pain, just like ordinary karmic reactions, they are different in a significant sense. Material happiness and distress arising from karma leave a subtle residue called karmapala, the seed of future entanglement. Such enjoyment and suffering tend toward degradation and increase the danger of falling into hellish oblivion. Happiness and distress generated from the Supreme Lord's desires, however, leave no trace after their immediate purpose has been served. Moreover, the Vaishnava who enjoys such reciprocation with the Lord is in no danger of falling down into nescience. So in other words, for the ordinary materialistic person, they experience some suffering, and that just entangles them more. Like, you know, I'm starving, I'm experiencing suffering, so what do? I go and steal something, so more karmic reaction for that, or I hurt somebody, more karmic reaction. You know, in other words, it continues the cycle. The happiness just doesn't help the non-devotee. It just keeps them in the material cycle, in this material world. For a non-devotee, it has a purpose. I mean, for the devotee, it has a purpose. And it does not continue the cycle of distress, is what Vishwanath is saying. But rather, it has an immediate purpose that's being served and does not lead us to degradation, but leads us to advancement. Now, Srila Prabhupada also explained this similar way. This is from Krishna Book, Chapter 88. Now, that's, you probably remember, some of you know Chapter 88, Verse 8. It's that famous verse where, I think Maharaj Parikshit is asking Sukadev, or is it Yudhishthira? I forget who's asking who. But the question was, why are the devotees of Vishnu, in other words, Vishnu, Krishna is the richest man, why are his devotees poor? Shiva is like poor and ashes, and, you know, why are his devotees rich? So there's a long explanation, and there's a many, many page explanation. And the one in the BBT edition, they pretty much have put almost word for word, or almost exactly, Vishwanatha Thakur's purport, which is several pages long. So he explains this whole reason of why devotees may appear to be suffering. One thing he says is, how is the devotee any better than the ordinary karmi? The answer is that the karmis and the devotees are not on the same level. In whatever condition of life the karmi may be, he continues the cycle of birth and death. I'm sorry. My apologies. No, I just read Vishnu. This is Srila Prabhupada. This is Srila Prabhupada in Krishna Book, Chapter 88. You know, it's similar. He bases his on Krishna. The answer, karmis and devotees are not on the same level. In whatever condition of life the karmi may be, he continues in the cycle of birth and death because the seed of karma, or fruit of activity, is there. And it fructifies whenever there is an opportunity. By the law of karma, a common man is perpetually entangled in repeated birth and death. Whereas a devotee's distress and happiness, not being under the laws of karma, are part of a temporary arrangement by the Supreme Lord, which does not entangle the devotee. Such an arrangement is made by the Lord to serve a temporary purpose. So we gave you different examples, the fan winding down. Probably gives an example of the difference between a kitten in the jaws of the mother cat, where it feels safe and secure, or the rat being in the jaws of the mother cat. Same, looks the same, but Prabhupada says for the rat, it means certain death. So for one, you could say the material distress or whatever, one is being held by Krishna and the other is being killed by material energy. Another example I like to give is, I've mentioned this one before, you bounce a ball off a wall, and by karma, the example of karma would be the mechanical cause and effect. You hit a certain angle, comes back at a certain angle, and runs the ball, bounces back to me mechanically. If I throw the ball and someone catches it and tosses it back to me, that's Krishna. That's Krishna. That's how material works for a devotee. It may look the same, the ball is still coming back to me, but Krishna is tossing to me purposefully for a reason. Where for the non-devotee, it's just mechanical reaction, and action and reaction of karma. Okay? So the other reason I mentioned was that Krishna sometimes puts devotees in difficulty for their advancement and for their surrender. And I think this is probably the main thing that we need to always remember. What is this purpose? What is this reason, this temporary purpose that has been mentioned? Vishnu describes this very nicely in his commentary to actually 10.14.8, which is it's that verse, right? Says, a devotee understands that the happiness and distress he undergoes due to the performance of bhakti and committing aparads are special mercy from the Lord. It is like a father who sometimes makes his child drink milk and sometimes makes him drink bitter neem juice. Sometimes the father embraces and kisses his son, and other times he punishes him. The devotee accepts whatever happens to him as the arrangement of the Lord acting for his benefit. The devotee thinks, the Lord certainly knows what is best for me, even if I don't know. Karma and time have no effect on a devotee, so this is Krishna's personal arrangement for me. Out of his mercy, Krishna sometimes gives me happiness and sometimes gives me distress, considering how to engage me in his service. So in other words, example the parent is given. The parent will sometimes punish the child, the son is acting very lovingly and kisses and, you know, plays with the child. The parent may give the child sweets and sometimes gives bitter neem, which is medicinal, of course. You know, the idea of the giving medicine, the child doesn't. Now, the child doesn't like the punishment and the child doesn't like the bitter medicine. But is the parent equally acting in love in both cases? Yes. The parent gives the bitter medicine out of love for the child because he wants the child to get better. The parent may punish the child out of love because he wants the child, you know, to act properly, to do the right thing, to, you know, to act in the right way. So Krishna is the same as that parent, in a sense. So sometimes Krishna rewards us, everything is happy. Sometimes Krishna may have to correct us, right? Just like the parent. But he's doing it in a loving way, and as has been said here, he knows what's best for us. Okay. So, of course, we're like a child that can't always understand the parent's loving good wishes. While the parent understands what they're doing, the child doesn't really know. A young child has probably no idea why, if, you know, you have like a young puppy or a young dog or something, you try to train them so that, you know, they'll be do things properly and they'll eventually be happy, but they don't understand in the beginning. They have no idea why. In other words, Krishna's greater intelligence, far, far beyond what we can imagine, knows the whole picture and acts in our best interest. Now, the last reason is given, maybe we won't spend so much time on it, is offenses. There is the issue of Vaishnava aparadha and offenses, and devotees do suffer because of that. And Bhakti, in the Bhakti Samrita Sindhu 121, Vishnu Chakravartakura's commentary says, in spite of the fact that Baba Arati has appeared, the obstacles have not been completely dissipated. There still may remain a trace of some serious aparadha, because the effects of aparadha are strong and long-lasting. And this condition, that even a trace of aparadha that generates suffering, Sanjaya Bhakti, the perfectional state, cannot appear. So, in other words, if aparadhas are there, one does not reach the perfect stage. And Vishwanath Chakravartakura further states, this is going back again to his commentary in the sixth chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, in chapters 2 and 3, I mean the sixth canto, chapters 2 and 3, he says that there are two specific offenses that bring suffering, even while one is chanting. We know there are the 10 offenses against the chanting of the holy name. And he says, most of them, just by continuing chanting, you'll overcome. He says, but there are two that are very powerful. One is the first offense of offending devotees or blaspheming devotees. And the second is committing sin on the strength of chanting. That means purposefully saying, oh, I can go out and do with this because no matter, I'll just chant and make up, you know. In other words, you know, he says, but other offenses, continued chanting relieves the effect without suffering, but with these, one may have to suffer some until one becomes purified. So all these things are there. So how do we experience freedom from suffering? How do we get a better understanding? At least it's going to help us deal with, you know, when we are in distress, you know, to have a, you know, an attitude towards it that helps us get through it. And I referred to this before because Vishnath wrote a very, very nice commentary. But this is, I think, this verse is so important. It's from the 10th canto. The Srila Prabhupada said this verse should be our motto. Anybody know which one that one is? Prabhupada said it should be the motto. You are right. Tate nukampam su samikshamano bhunja agatma kritam vipakam pridbhagvapur bir vedadan namaste vichetayo mukti pade sadhaya bhak. My dear Lord, one who is, this is Lord Brahma, of course. My dear Lord, one who is earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. So this is the mood of the devotee. And I was thinking of, what lessons do we learn from this verse? First of all, it's the devotee's mood is that I am maybe suffering, but it's due to my past misdeeds. In other words, the devotee does not blame others for his suffering. He takes responsibility. This is even a psychological principle, often in counseling. We talk about how important it is for people to take whatever responsibility they have in a situation. In other words, rather than, they did this and they did that and they did, yeah, but what is your response? What do you do? How do you take responsibility? Well, for the devotee has to take complete responsibility. We're responsible for our own situation due to our past activities. And how do we feel about that? No, the devotee is repentant. He said, Lord Brahma says one should feel repentant. I'm sorry that I did these things. I feel bad. And I am now trying to purify myself by worshiping Krishna with all body, mind, and words. But I need to be patient. Lord Brahma says, patiently waiting, all the while continuing my service with strong faith in the Lord. Patiently. Patiently performing bhakti. Knowing that eventual result will come. Right? Mukti pade. Liberation. Or I think our acharyas explained this means, for us it means pure bhakti. Right? Who was it? Sarvabhaumavadacharya who didn't like this? Yeah, he didn't like it. He says, why doesn't it say bhakti pade? And which is, no, just understand it. It means bhakti. Anyway. But, yes. In other words, one will become completely relieved of all of one's suffering. One will become a pure devotee of the Lord if one patiently endures this and continues on with devotional service. Now, we may not always understand the plan, and that's part of our problem because we have very limited vision. Srila Prabhupada says, continuing, this is also from chapter 88, Srila Prabhupada said, it may be questioned why a devotee is put into such tribulation by the personality of Godhead. This kind of arrangement by the Lord is just like the father sometimes being unkind to his sons. Because the devotee is surrendered soul, taken charge of by the Supreme Lord, whatever condition of distress or happiness the Lord puts him in, it is to be understood that behind this arrangement is a large plan designed by the personality of Godhead. And a large plan going on, whatever we're experiencing. And we may not always understand. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.9.17, the verse says, O King, no one can know the plan of the Lord, Sri Krishna. Even though great philosophers inquire exhaustively, they are bewildered. So the great philosophers can't always understand the plan. What about us? We cannot always understand the plan, but we know philosophically that whatever suffering and distress is minimized and that Krishna is working for our surrender and for our learning. Srila Prabhupada says in purport, Bhishma wanted to impress upon Maharaj Yudhisthira that since time immemorial, no one, including such demigods as Shiva and Brahma, could ascertain the real plan of the Lord. So what can we understand about it? It is useless also to inquire about it. Even exhaustive philosophical inquiries of sages cannot ascertain the plan of the Lord. The best policy is simply to abide by the orders of the Lord without argument. Whatever Krishna wants, we know that's best for us. So how do we help a devotee or ourselves who might be experiencing distress and times of suffering? First, understand that Krishna is controlling all. We are part of this larger plan, this big plan the Prabhupada is saying. It's part of a larger plan we may or may not understand. And there's a specific learning or spiritual lesson for us at this time. Sometimes I've found that if you can't really figure out exactly, I don't know exactly what I'm supposed to be learning or what the teaching is here, sometimes it's as simple as Krishna's giving me an opportunity to surrender. Because that is really kind of the big lesson we all have to learn is surrendering, isn't it? We learn that we have to surrender to Krishna. We have no other shelter. So Krishna teaches us that. And Krishna loves us, we have to understand. Even when putting us in distress, he's acting our best interest. I've seen sometimes devotees who almost, they're in some distress, and they might lose faith in Krishna or be mad at Krishna, angry at God. That's very common. Something very, very, very bad happens. Some people get angry at God. That's a very common reaction. But a devotee, kind of like, you may even feel that way, but then you sort of sit back, you reflect on it, you know, or whatever, you chant, you pray, and you realize, no, it's not going to serve any purpose to be angry at God. You're not going to get anywhere with that. Try to understand that God does love us and is caring for us, and what is the reason, what is the purpose? And even if I don't immediately understand it, maybe later I will understand it. Or even if not, know that there is some purpose. And also, we can be helped. We can get through things through sadhu sangha, through association and friendship with the devotees, also by increasing our hearing and chanting, depending upon our guru, depending upon Srila Prabhupada, hearing the philosophy. Because our philosophy is continually telling us, yes, material world is miserable. Spiritual life is the way to end misery. In other words, we have to hear it over and over and over again. Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. So hearing and chanting and praying. When we chant and we pray, Krishna gives us that solace from the day, he gives us relief, he gives us that understanding, and it will come eventually. So the devotee may experience suffering, but it's also spiritual relief when you try to understand and surrender to Krishna's plan. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Yeah.
What's the first one?
Krishna's Leela. In other words, maybe putting sin in distress, maybe just part of a Leela with Krishna and his pure devotees, his eternal associates.
Oh, I see.
So with the learning there, in other words, Queen Kunti and the Pandavas didn't need to be put in distress so that they could learn to surrender. It's because we needed to learn. In other words, they're already 100% surrendered devotees. You know, so they're involved in this Leela. They may be temporarily think I'm in distress and I have to sit, because that's part of their loving relationship. For them, it's more increasing their love for Krishna. But for us, we can learn from that also. We can learn the process of surrendering and expecting Krishna's protection.
So you are saying four reasons for
the Leela, then just the residual effects of karma, from our past karma, like the fan winding down. But that's given out individually. It's given out, it's not ordinary karma, but it's the effects of past, And the third one was that Krishna puts us, deliberately gives us a position so we can learn and surrender. In other words, that distress has a purpose in our spiritual advancement. Then the fourth is sometimes just by offenses, then we experience some suffering. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some overlap between the
yeah.
two.
No, very nice class. I was just contemplating when I heard your explanation on that how was the word you used that refers to the second chapter of first canto, the Vidyate Hridaya Granthis, that I was thinking, like, what causes, or maybe I'll just say it and then you can correct me. First, acknowledging the whatever the circumstance or challenges, and in other words, the responsibility, you mentioned that one, taking responsibility of my own reaction of previous karma, whatever it is, means I am accepting, not denying, and acknowledging the, and then maybe regretting or repenting. Otherwise, where is the impetus to correct? If I don't accept that, actually it was a bad thing. Otherwise, where is the?
Yes, that's the point. One has to first acknowledge that. In other words, that's why the first thing Lord Brahma says is, due to my past misdeeds,
Yes.
Right. And you're right, because without that, I didn't do anything. I don't know what, you know, then why would we change our behavior? Or how would we learn? Yeah. You know, it's kind of like, we're not like hellfire and brimstone Christian preachers. So, you know, we don't really preach like that. You know, sin. But at the same time, sometimes a little bit of guilt is not a bad thing in spiritual life. I think the prophet said that, you know. In other words, we should feel a little bit bad. You know, I mean, just in this lifetime, I know that my lifestyle before I became a devotee was completely sinful. You know, I'm not proud of that. I should not be proud of that. I should feel bad about it. You know, I'm sorry that I didn't know about Krishna. And, you know, I mean, everyone in America was meat eaters, drug, everything else, right?
So. But that's very good, though, the way you say it, that, because that keeps the humility actually level.
Oh.
Like, good. Yeah, otherwise, the blaming, of course, the absence of the humility.
Humility in many ways, and I think you could see different places where our acharyas and Srila Prabhupada have talked about that. Humility is in many ways the essence of advancing in spiritual life,
yes.
Isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
What is your opinion? You said that born sin, like
of what?
I was born with sin. The idea that
do we
agree or do we accept?
Well, being in the material world, having a material body, pretty much means that. It means I left Krishna, right? In other words, unless I'm, you know, like a Shaktivesh avatar, and I'm coming here to Krishna sent me here to preach, you know, some special mission. I'm eternal associate. If I'm not that, yeah, then that means I left Krishna. We had a material desire to leave to, we went away from Krishna. So that alone we should regret. We should regret that we left Krishna.
That's true.
We were with, you know.
That's true.
So, yeah. Yeah, it's not that we beat ourselves up about it, you know, constantly in guilt. We don't need to because we've corrected. We're doing the right thing now. Now that we've understood that, we don't just sit around feeling guilty, we correct it. And we serve Krishna and worship Krishna and chant his holy name and hear about him in association with devotees and do those things which are going to bring us back to him. And that's what he wants. And Krishna is happy to see, oh, this jiva has finally turned to me, is finally surrendering and coming back to me. Mm. So Krishna's happy. Krishna wants us to come. And sometimes he may have to correct us a little bit because we've gone off here a little bit or we didn't learn that yet, you know. So there may be some correction, but ultimately it's like the parent wants us to grow up to be good citizens. He wants us to grow up to be good devotees, right?
Recently, something happened to UF1 professor that I knew a long time. And he knew that I like philosophy, so we would talk, and then his six-month-old child had a leukemia and she's dying. Mm. So the minister Michael in New York, he said, so he asked him that question that, well, if you say this is the only life and then born with a leukemia, how do you explain this?
You can't.
Correct.
You really can't. You know, it's that old question of, you know, there was even that book that was written by a rabbi that says, why do bad things happen to good people? You can't explain it. They always say it's a mystery, or they have no good explanation why an innocent child gets leukemia and dies. If God is all good, how does he let that happen? If you don't understand reincarnation, if you don't understand karma, if you don't understand, you know, all of that of our philosophy, it makes no sense. You know, and then if you think you only have one lifetime, what if the person, like sometimes they say, if you're not baptized, you're not going to heaven, or, you know, what, just because, you know, they didn't get him baptized in time, now he said, no, it doesn't really make sense. But we understand there's always another chance. The progression of spiritual evolution is such that eventually every living entity comes back to the human form of life and is given the opportunity to go but to surrender to Krishna and go back. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu already said he's going to liberate this entire universe, right? Didn't he?
But in order to claim, you have to be awake, not sleep or dream or deep sleep.
Yeah.
Gurgunda Maharaj said, because Prabhupada also in the 8th canto he mentioned, those souls, they are in dream or sleep or deep sleep, they may not get touch in Mahaprabhu's.
Well, that's the unfortunate thing, then they have to keep kind of going through the cycle.
Yeah.
Those, because we still have time, we it's obvious many human beings doesn't look like they're all going to surrender in this lifetime, right? I mean, that seems apparent. You know, that there are billions of them out there, and a small fraction are becoming devotees. I mean, a lot, but still, it's a small fraction, you know, overall. So, yeah, it may, but every single human being, every living entity that somehow gets touched by devotees in some aspect of devotional service, or takes prasadam, or hears the holy name, or has an opportunity to make more advancement.
Mm.
You know, that eventual, Vishwanath says, that eventual accumulation of sukriti, you know, through contact with devotees, will finally lead a person to the platform of shraddha, of faith. And that's how, I mean, because most people are faithless. How many people get faith out of faithlessness? By this association with devotees and Agatha Sukriti, unknown devotional
service. Yes. Also, one point you made very nice. I really appreciate you, Klaus, that you made the point of Jiva Goswami's with the needle and the leaves metaphor. I heard that example many, many years back, probably a few decades, that the sage was explaining that material desires are like a leaf. And everybody, when they come to some sort of relief, whether through a sages or some religion or something they do, it's like a sweeping those leaves away. But problem is that when they sweep, because they don't have a control on those, a little wind comes and it spread in the heart all the desire again. And it never can be resolved. They go life after life. So that example, it says, no, you be patient and put all the desire one by one in a needle. Even strong wind comes, it is not going to blow anymore. You will be peaceful. The modes of material nature is considered the wind. Makes it.
Yeah, because once one starts bhakti, the needle goes all the way through.
Yes.
But it's just there's time separating our whole understanding of that.
But it's safer. Because
no
more those desires will come.
That's the whole idea.
Yeah.
That the desire seeds are being destroyed, as well as the progression of desires and the future karmic reactions that are all being destroyed.
Right. Mother,
we should probably end.
Mother Sukada has a question.
Okay.
No comment. She said, doesn't Tulsi protect also from long-lasting effects of apurad?
Doesn't Tulsi? I'm sure. I mean,
so we don't have to do anything, just offer Tulsi? All the offense will be gone? I don't know.
Well, it talks about, right, that even the offense of killing a Brahmin is wiped away. That doesn't mean that you can go ahead and continue killing Brahmins, you know. It means, right? Doesn't it say when we chant Tulsi that all those offenses are destroyed? Yes, it means that the power of bhakti can alleviate the reactions to any type of sin. That doesn't mean that we continue them. You know, we have to continue the process, or they will, you know. And then we'd be committing the seventh offense, which is to commit sinful activities deliberately on the strength of bhakti. And that would not work for us.
Mm.
Yeah, so past sinful activities are destroyed, but that doesn't mean we can deliberately continue sinning. In fact, I don't know if I read it or not, but Prabhupada said...
Because then it becomes offense.
Yeah, then it's offense, the seventh offense. Yeah, and Prabhupada said in that quote that he said about initiation, how all your sinful activities... Then after that he said, but do not sin again. In other words, now you've got a clean slate, don't start up again. You know, you can start accumulating if you want.
Sure.
Yeah.
So that has to be conscious. The consciousness has to be purified. It is not like some outside help will do it.
Right.
No, it's not like there's a trick. You know, hey, you do this and you've got to get out of jail free card or something.
She also mentioned another one. She said, other devotees can help those devotees who are suffering with association. Prasadam, very important to reach out.
Yeah.
That's true.
Thank you. Comment.
Very nice. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll go to Prabhupada.
what I ask without the mic?
Without the mic, what?
Yeah. Well, the past thing.
No, I didn't stop it. You don't get anything.
Hare Krishna, Tamaha Hare Prabhu. Thanks for the class. It seems, in my experience looking on, for example, the Srila Prabhupada disciples here, and you gave an example in the class of your own so-called simple activities before coming to Krishna consciousness. It seems like there's a crossover because you had to experience those to come to Krishna consciousness, and then holding that guilt you were talking about gave you like impetus to push on. That humility was coming through with that. So in one sense, Krishna knows what's going to happen, right? And Srila Prabhupada even said that people were placed here to help him. Or someone said that, I've read that somewhere. So at what part was the karma that you were receiving before you came to Krishna consciousness, Krishna's plan anyway?
As I understand your question, it's kind of like, in other words, is there a sort of a point when your karma's ending and Krishna begins working personally with you? Because it seems like we must have been led to Krishna at some point, even before the really surrendering. Yeah, I think that's true. But it doesn't mean that all our karma had necessarily been ended. Until we fully took up the process, and Prabhupada explained, the process of coming under the internal energy or the spiritual energy of the Lord comes to the point of initiation, or at least accepting the spiritual master's instructions, chanting, following the principles like that. Then that whole dynamic shifts where Krishna's internal energy is there, and that's what we're working under. Now, obviously, whatever pious activity or devotional service or whatever it might have been in the past, and then our own desires, of course, may have led us. And Krishna says he's directing the wanderings of all living entities. And he's the source of remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. And yeah, Krishna's continually, through the super soul, directing us. And to those who are somewhat sincere, yes, Krishna will direct us. You know, of course, many, many people were directed to Srila Prabhupada, to meet devotees, to get a book. Not everybody surrenders. So, in other words, Krishna actually gives many, many opportunities to many souls, but the free will is also there. The free will, whether you want to take it or not. You know, as the boys were saying to Prabhupada, you know, the boys are very humble and they really told so much appreciate Prabhupada. They said, Prabhupada, everything, we've only come because of your mercy. And Prabhupada said, yes, the mercy is there. He said, but you took it up. Mm-hmm. You picked it up. You know, then the example is given how the mercy of the Lord, the mercy of the Guru is like the rain. It rains on the ocean where it doesn't need it. It rains on rocks. It doesn't do any good, but it also rains on fertile soil where things can grow. So if the fertile soil is there in your heart, then it grows, but mercy may not always be taken up.
So it is not the mercy alone. My deceptive nature, deceptive mood has to be there.
The mood has to be there. I mean, most devotees have a similar story, at least those in the West. That some of you were kind of raised with this, and maybe a little different. But most of us have a similar story, that at some point we were searching. You know, I mean, it's pretty rare when somebody perfectly happy in their life, you know, happened to, read a book, say, I'm going to go join. I mean, it could happen, you know, but usually it's like there's some search, or there's some desire within the heart, right? In other words, I want some kind of spiritual life. There's got to be more than this. I'm dissatisfied, you know, with materialism. At least for most of us, I think that was a common experience. And that search, because there was some sincerity in that search, Krishna led us, gave us an opportunity. It said, by the mercy of Krishna, one is given Guru, and then by the mercy of the Guru, one is given Krishna.
So Krishna was preparing you for the Guru.
Yeah. Krishna's leading you. Yeah, Krishna led us to Srila Prabhupada, you know, to his devotees, to his books, to his temple, whatever, and then he taught us about Krishna. Okay. Thank you very much for your question. Very nice. Thank you, Pranagavinda, for a very nice discussion.
Thank you. It was nice. Very nice.